Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
If you're able to have that true empathy with your customer, you're going to come up with solutions that they haven't even thought about and that they won't even be able to tell you about because they're not in that mind space of coming up with solutions. Like you are. And when you feel that pain, I think it reduces the need for extensive market research. I'm not saying it's useless, but I'm saying, you know, when you can feel that pain, it allows you to come up with solutions that you never would come up with from market research, for example. So, and I think that's a big secret. Like a lot of the stuff we do is we don't get it necessarily from doing market research. You know, we get it from experiencing the pain ourselves and then coming up with solutions.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Roger Salem of the Winner's Circle and with the founder of Book, Speak, Repeat, Kerry Heaps, then do go check them out, but only after you've listened to today's conversation. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Gideon Shelwick. Gideon loves helping entrepreneurs get their message out to large global audiences using the power of video to effectively build their audience and dramatically improve engagement. His company, Splashio, makes it easy to create super engaging videos ready for social media domination. Splashio is a 100% done-for-you video captioning and framing service. In our discussion today, Gideon talked to me about building a connection with your marketing. Otherwise, it's just noise. We talked about really understanding your viewer and what are their pain points. The concept of being your customer to get to that understanding. And we talked about listening to problems people have and being really helpful in order to generate some new opportunities. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Gideon Shelwick. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from a place called Maroochydore, which is in Queensland, Australia, on the Sunshine Coast, I believe, Gideon Shelwick, who's a video marketing specialist. He's the founder of Splashio, which is a done-for-you service allowing you to easily repurpose your videos with baked-in subtitles. And it's actually a human person making sure that everything is done correctly there with those subtitles and that it looks great. So even though it's an online service, it's people doing the work. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Gideon. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Hey, Jürgen, a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to this one.
Sandy Everleth, who was our guest on episode 244 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we have a conversation with you, Gideon. So big hello to Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. Yeah, thanks for the introduction. And we're just talking about how cool a person she is and how nice she is for introducing us.
Yes. She's introduced me to a lot of people over the years. And I was just saying that I hadn't had her on my podcast, even though we'd known one another for many years in online communities. And I eventually realized that that was something I needed to address. So she was on episode 244.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I'm really looking forward to talking about all things online video and how to use video to build your audience, build relationships with them, which to me is something that I think is really important and dramatically improve the engagement you get as a result. Before we do that, though, Gideon, give us a bit of a whistle-stop tour of your background and how you got to where you are today and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, I've only been an entrepreneur for a relatively short period of time. It's been about, I think it's 15 years this year, very soon, within about a month. About 15 years ago, 16 years ago, I was stuck in a job. A job was okay, but I was stuck in a sense with where I wanted to be with my life. And one day I just told my wife, said, look, I don't want to be working for someone else anymore. I want to start my own business. And she was keen. And I said, well, there's a twist. I want to emigrate at the same time as well. So start fresh. So we were in New Zealand and she was keen for sports. We were just married at that stage for about 2 years. And she said, let's do it. And long story short, about three months later, we landed in Australia. I wanted to get a job in Australia to just kick things off. I couldn't actually get a job. My wife was the one who got a job. And so she was paying the bills while I was trying to figure out this whole business thing. And I was lucky enough to get a nice start. I had a good mentor who helped me write a book and then promote the book as well. I did pretty well within the first 6 months. You know, that I got enough of a taste of success to think, hey, this is amazing. And then after those 6 months, things went south quite a lot. Our sales dropped because, we didn't have any traffic to our website. I didn't know how to drive traffic. I didn't know anything about business. All I knew was that I wrote a book and I had a sales page up and someone promoted for me. That's about it. So that wasn't really a business. And, it took me another 2 years or so before I had my first big success again. And during those 2 years, it was pretty tough going because, typical sort of entrepreneur issues you go through going from an employee mindset to an entrepreneurial sort of mindset, which is very different. And having to, learn everything from scratch, unlearn a lot of things. I mean, we got to a point where I was just going, this is really, doubting whether I made the right decision, to quit my cozy job and become an entrepreneur and sort of earn nothing for two and a half years. And we were very, very close to giving up and just saying, screw it, I'm just going to go and get a job again. Luckily, there was a project that came through that turned into a partnership. We launched a course together on teaching people how to grow their businesses using blogging. This was back in 2008 or so. And this thing just went really well. We launched within the first 2 weeks of launching. We had 10,000 people join our email database. Within a month, we had a recurring income of about $23,000 coming in. And, going from sort of zero income to that sort of income was amazing. And
what was the turnaround there? Because you mentioned that, you didn't really know how to market yourself or how to market the book. What was the big turnaround there? Because obviously you got lots of traffic to the site. And it was the right traffic because it got people to subscribe or purchase the course.
Absolutely. Well, one key thing I realized was that I'm more of a creator than a promoter. And that was important for me to realize. It wasn't an easy pill to swallow. And to this day, I kind of wish that I was better at the promotion side. But I realized that I'm much more of a creator. I love creating. And that I need to team up with other people to help me with the promotional side, the leverage side. So in this partnership, I was definitely the creator. I created the website. In fact, I created the whole thing. I coded it up in HTML back then. I can't even believe that I did that. I did all the graphics. I created all the videos for the training course. I created all the emails. I even did the customer service all by myself. I basically did the whole lot when it comes to the creative and the creation side of the business. And my partner, Yara Starak, he already had an audience. He had a successful blog at the time, Entrepreneur's Journey. And he already had a 20,000 people on his email database. And on top of that, he also had some great connections in the industry of other people who could promote for us when we launched. So when we launched, he promoted on his blog. He sent an email out to his email database or several emails. We got all our partners or affiliates to promote for us as well. And, you know, all of that contributed towards us having a successful launch. So in that particular launch, he couldn't have done it without me and I couldn't have done it without him. You know, so it was a very, very good partnership. And, you know, we're friends to this day. The partnership lasted for about 2 or 3 years and until we passed it on to another person who's still running it today. But yeah, that was a big realization for me to, you know, a lot of the puzzle pieces have fallen into place for me, how everything works, you know, only reflecting on it more recently as well, but really looking back, the things that needed to happen were, there were two key ingredients. One was the creation of value, which I'm really, really good at. And then once you've got that, you need the leverage of that value, which is the marketing function. And they work together. They have to work together. Otherwise, you don't have a business. It's, you know, it's no use creating the most innovative, awesome product or service in the world and no one knows about it. And along with that, it's also no good if you're promoting something that is not really a great product or service. You just, you know, you shoot yourself in the foot long term. So they have to work together really well. And for me, those are the two big components that came together really well in that particular project. And all my successful projects going forward, there's always been those two components in place. There's always been a big creative component and then a big leveraging marketing sort of component that would make it successful.
Hmm. All right. And when did you get into video then?
Well, Napoleon Hill talks about this backdoor sort of thing, you know, where you, the backdoor opportunity where you sort of, you go out in one direction to achieve a certain thing. And then there's this other backdoor opportunity that you don't even necessarily pay attention to. And then that thing becomes the thing, you know, eventually. Mm-hmm. And so in my case was, you know, at the time when I had that success with my first book, it was awesome. But then struggling after that to make ends meet, I thought, well, what can I do to figure out how to succeed with this? And so I started interviewing people who are already successful in the industry. And at the time, there were a ton of audio interviews. This was before the days of podcasting even. But actually, podcasting was around, but it was before the iPhone. And so it was before podcasting really took off, right? But everyone was still doing audio interviews. And I thought, I'm going to be different. This is 2006, 2007, around about there. YouTube was only about a year old. And I said, I'm going to be different. I'm going to do all these interviews on video. And was that both the right and the wrong decision? It was the wrong decision in the sense that it was overwhelming for me. Like I interviewed like 20 people or so on video, and these files, just on a practical level, were just so big. They were huge, and I only had a PC back then at the time, and it ended up killing my PC and killing me almost in the process as well. It was just too overwhelming, and the big vision for that project was just going to interview these people. And then turned it into a membership site where people could watch these videos and I'd continue interviewing people. And then people would pay me, you know, a monthly fee to as part of the membership. But, you know, what happened was that project completely failed because it never saw the light of day because, you know, my computer broke and I broke. And but in the process, I became really, really good at online video. And, you know, inadvertently without sort of having that initial desire, it was like, you know, I just picked it up in the process of wanting to do something else. And that became the backdoor opportunity because one of the people that I interviewed was Yaro, you know, my first business partner. And, it wasn't my first business partner, but, you know, for that particular project. And so he's one of the people I interviewed. He's in Brisbane, luckily. We lived in Brisbane at the time as well. And so I said, come to my house. We've got a green, you know, got a studio set up and with a green screen. I interviewed him. He was sufficiently impressed, and then, you know, from that he asked me to do some work, you know, to create a set of videos for a project, become a blogger project, and then those videos became so successful. We had 300,000 downloads before we even launched the official membership, you know, and so we ended up turning it into a partnership. So it's like, you know, I kind of fell into it in a way through a backdoor opportunity, and then, you know, just one project led to another. And, you know, since then I've just been in love with online video just been honing in on my skill and building it with each new business and project that I started.
Fascinating. So you've got to keep your eyes open for opportunity is the big message there.
I mean, absolutely. Even now, with if you look at Splashio, the form that it's in now is not what it was when I started Splashio in 2012. In fact, you know, I only spent about a year on Splashio, and then there was another backdoor opportunity that came through that made me divert paths away a bit with Splashio. Like, I went into another startup with some other partners and created a company called VRoll, where we created software for automating video ads in the video ad space. And that was awesome. And we did that for about 4 years, and I exited that company. And I've only been back on Splashio for almost, you know, almost 2 years now, a year and a half. And again, Splashio, the current version of Splashio, came through another backdoor opportunity where, you know, a friend of mine said that they were struggling with captions, and he asked if I had any experience in it. And I said, well, no, but let me look into it. And so, and then, you know, that one thing led to another, and it turned into a business, you know. So it's been pretty, it's been pretty interesting. And
listening out for the problems that people have. Totally.
And I think that's the key, you know, that's, you know, being open to those opportunities and just listening, you know. And like, I think we can sometimes get really caught up in trying to do too much market research and guessing through market research what people really want. But it's not until you really get your hands dirty and get in there and feel the pain for yourself and when you start seeing the opportunities.
Yeah, that's great advice. Listening for people's problems, probably the first bit of market research you should be doing.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Now, I'd like to explore what you do at Splashio on a couple of levels, and also captioning, why captioning is important. But before we get to that, let's talk about video. Why is video important in today's marketing mix?
Well, you know, I think it's video marketing is almost nowadays almost a defunct term, I guess. And the reason I say that is because when you say marketing these days, you don't necessarily mean, when people say marketing these days, it's assumed that it's going to be online almost in most cases. Like, most business, if you're not online, there's a problem, you know, there's something wrong, or you've got a very, very kind of specialized sort of business that doesn't need the internet, you know, for growing, or you're sort of ignoring a great opportunity. And I guess more recently, and when I say more recently, I mean like in the last 10 years, video has become sort of part of the online marketing gig as well. So when you say marketing these days, I think really it must include, in most cases, the internet. And if you're doing something on the internet, I mean, you'd be silly not to be using video. It is just such a powerful medium for communication. I mean, look at us right now. We can see each other. This is online video. I know the video is not going to be published, but, you know, just me seeing you in this interview creates an affinity between the two of us. And I can see your facial expressions. I can see that you're sort of smiling a little bit at the moment and smiling a bit more now. and that puts a smile on my face. And that affects our interaction. And that's very hard to do with just audio or just text. With text and images, the trouble with that is you can have success with that, but, you know, you can always get a ghostwriter to create those things for you. When it comes to video and even audio, people know that it's coming from you. So it comes with authenticity built into it already. They know that it's you, and that builds trust. And, you know, when you think about building business, I mean, the core foundational stone of business is trust. I mean, if there's no trust, there's no business. That's just as simple as that. And video is just a remarkable tool for building an affinity with your audience, and not just your audience, but with everyone, and building that trust, which is just so, so important.
You mentioned kind of, you know, our interaction with one another just through the visual cues that we're giving one another, unconsciously even, but it certainly generates a reaction. One of the things that I certainly struggle with, and I'm pretty sure that, I know many of my clients have the same issues. I'm pretty sure a lot of people have the same issue, is when you record a video that's just going to camera, that you're then going to post on a website somewhere, or let's say social media. How do you get the same level of projection and connection with the person on the other side of the camera in that, in your experience? Do you have any tips for us there?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. And it took me, this is interesting. There were two levels, or there are multiple levels, but at least two that I can recall of how to really make a connection with someone using video. So I'm just trying to think whether I should just give you the short answer or build up to it. because it's there's more to it than you think. So what I often, I think I'll build up to the answer and leave you in suspense a little bit. Okay. So I think when people are starting, when they're starting out with video, recording themselves on a camera, say, in general, like in most cases, what I've seen is that there's a deer in headlights kind of effect. Where when you watch that video back, it almost feels like that person is not quite there. You can hear them speak, you can see them speak, but it feels like they're not speaking to you. You know, that is sort of quite robotic or whatever. And I figured out the reason for that. But that's what happens first. I'll give you the reason in a second. Now, when I saw that, I thought, how can you? I got a tip from someone, said, look, if you want to make a better connection with someone on camera, try and imagine you're talking to a friend when you're speaking to the camera. I thought, okay, that's great. But that's still not enough because you can still sort of try and speak to a friend, but imagine the friend when you're speaking to the camera and not really make the connection with the people on the other side of the camera, right? Your audience. So it works, but it still doesn't work as well. And then there's another level where I thought, okay, this is my own one, where I thought, okay, what if I change that relationship instead of just being my friend that I'm speaking to? How about if I speak to someone who I might be in love with? Imagine I'm speaking to my wife, or one of my kids, you know, someone with that sort of love connection. I don't tell people that, but, you know, that's what I might imagine. So I thought, okay, that could be pretty interesting because that means that it would change how I would speak, right? It would change my facial expressions. There'd be like subtle cues that would be different that we pick up on subconsciously, whether you want to believe it or not. There's this huge amount of communication just with our body language. And so I thought, okay, that's cool. So I did that for a few years. And it wasn't until I started understanding this idea of us as human beings being able to shift our awareness into different locations where it truly makes the difference. So those tips that I just mentioned are useful, but when you start shifting your awareness to a place other than the camera or even someone else's face, that's when it really starts happening. And you can do this yourself. If you close your eyes, for example, you could, if I close my eyes now, I could shift my awareness. So I could shift it, say, to my hand. Like in my mind, I'm shifting my awareness now to my hand. I can't see my hand, but my awareness has been shifted to my hand. My awareness at this point is nowhere else. It's just there on my hand. But now I can shift that awareness to my other hand. Now it's not on my original hand anymore. You know, there's a definite shift. And in the same way, I can shift that awareness to anywhere I want. And so it comes this, and this is now the answer. It's a really long answer, but I think it's really important. It makes a massive difference where you place your awareness when you're speaking into the camera. So the deer in headlight effect, that happens when your awareness is in the back of your mind when you're thinking about what you're trying to say. And people can pick up on that. You know, they can pick up on where your awareness is. Then the next level is where I'm sort of imagining I'm speaking to a friend. My awareness is then on my friend, right? It's not necessarily into the camera lens as much. So then if you can shift your awareness to inside the lens, just like I'm able to shift my awareness to one of my hands or my other hand or anywhere in the universe for that matter, I could shift my awareness to the moon now if I wanted to, you know. In the same way, I can shift my awareness to that exact spot in the camera and imagining that's a real person that I'm speaking to. So it's like those two things together, imagining I'm speaking to a real person, but but also shifting my awareness into the lens. And that makes a difference. I can't explain it, but more than what I have, I think if you can shift your awareness into the lens while imagining you're speaking to a loved one or a friend, that's just going to make a difference. That's going to make a big difference.
Yeah, that's really good advice. I hadn't sort of thought of it in those terms of shifting awareness. I mean, I've done the tricks of imagining talking to one person, somebody that you really like, I tend to view it as an ideal client. Here's a marketing video, so I'm speaking to my ideal client. So I imagine them standing there in front of me. And I have even done a video with a person who is my ideal client on the other side of the camera. So I am actually speaking to them.
Yes.
And
yes.
I guess in a sense that is shifting the awareness, isn't it? By having physically having somebody there.
Well, that's right. So in that sort of scenario, your awareness would be on that person that you're interviewing or they're interviewing you, right? And so the viewer can pick up on that. They can pick up that your awareness is on that person that you're talking to. So it creates reality. It's like there's a real conversation happening there. And it works the same way when you shift your awareness into the camera. People then feel like your awareness is on them. And then they feel they respond back, you know, like with a connection. It feels like to them, it feels like you're really speaking to them. Mm. And it's just a simple little trick, you know, of shifting your awareness. Like I was quite glad when I sort of discovered this, you know, because then I thought, oh, it's simpler than you think. You know, you can, the trouble with just imagining you speaking to a friend is that your awareness could still be in the back of your mind, imagining you speaking to that friend. It's still like a visual idea that you latch onto in the back of your mind, where your awareness sits there in the back, and you still, even though you feel like you're speaking to your friend, to other people, they're missing that connection because your awareness is not on them. And it seems so simple, but it works well.
And I guess it's something that takes a bit of practice. And it just occurred to me that, I mean, there's these tools around now where you can easily record a video to send somebody as an email. So rather than type an email to a client, a partner, whatever, and I've done this in the past, even to people I've never met before. Like, for example, when I submit a support request to some online software that I'm using, and let's say something's gone wrong or I haven't understood something, I'll actually do a screen record video and then get on the video myself. It's amazing the responses I get from that. You know, people come back and not only do they give me the answer, but they say, this is really amazing. It was really helpful that you showed us what your experience is, and we loved seeing you on video and so on. So that's a perhaps a good way to practice it, actually doing it, because there you forget you're actually shifting your awareness to the people you're speaking to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, if you think about what it is that people want, you know, why do people watch certain videos and not others? At least one of the things that people really want is a sense of connection. They don't necessarily want more information. There's enough. There's too much information, you know. And so, because I often see this, and you can see this. You can just when you watch videos autoplay on, you know, on your feed, you can see the difference between people who are just giving content. They're just doing content marketing. They're not doing connection marketing. You know, there's a big difference. And those who are just doing content marketing, it's just all about, you got to get this content out into this video so that other people can consume it. It's almost like trying to hammer content into people's heads. Whereas if you can see the difference where people have this intense desire to connect. And it's through that connection that it opens up the gates for information to flow there, you know. So you got to have that opening first before the information will flow. Otherwise, it's just like noise, and it's like keep on scrolling. You don't want to watch someone that's just, you know, blabbing away and not making a connection. Why bother? You know, there's better things to do with your lifetime. Life is short, right?
Yep, that's right. Right. Yeah. All right. Well, why then are captions important on videos?
Great question. So what we're seeing today with social media is, it's been around for a wee while now, but when they introduced the feeds in social media with Facebook, you know, sort of they're leading the, the way, and then, you know, everyone else following around, and then the introduction of video, and then the introduction of auto-playing the videos in the feeds. All of a sudden, you had a massive increase in silent videos being, you know, getting streamed in people's feeds. Now, before that, and to this day as well, YouTube hasn't changed all that much. But in general, when you go and watch a video, you click on it and watch it and listen to it at the same time, right? But with the feed thing, you know, people are busy and or people are in situations where they don't necessarily want to turn the sound on. And they're just sort of scrolling and they want to sort of see what's happening first before they, you know, even decide to click on it. So it's introduced this whole world of silent video that we didn't have before. And, you know, Facebook says that 85% of people watch their videos on silent. And if that's your audience, if 85% of your audience is watching their videos on silent, and you're just a talking head without any captions on it, how on earth will they know what your video is about? And how on earth will they, are they going to stop and watch your content or consume your content, read your video, so to speak? So you got to have captions on your videos these days. And it's not going away. Like it's actually been here for a long time now, and it's just becoming more mainstream. You're seeing it more and more now, but it's not going away. And the reason it's not going away is because iPhones or, you know, mobile phones are not going away. The situation where you want to be just consuming content without having sound on it, that's not going to go away. As far as I can tell, it's only growing. So the need and the importance for you of having captions in your videos is just increasing by the day. And it basically, it all comes down to engagement, which is just another fancy word for connection. You know, engagement, when you sort of visualize it, what does that mean? Engage, to engage or to connect. It's the same thing. It's like when you think about a D-lock, you know, it engages, it locks in. That's what you get with engagement. You lock in your viewer. And if they're not engaged, then they're not locked in and they're gone. You know, so yeah. So with captions, there's something magical that happens when you add words on your videos. They're not really words that you're adding. They're visual imaginary pictures that you're creating for your viewer. So give you a very common example that you probably heard before. If I tell you to please don't imagine a pink elephant flying in the sky right now, like even though it's not real, you can't help but imagine that just because I said it, right? So the word pink elephant in and of itself doesn't seem like much, but it's not actually the word, it's the image. And so the same thing with captions. It's actually you're creating images, visual images for people to consume when they read your videos. And that's incredibly powerful. I mean, anyone who's a good reader or loves reading knows that the secret to good reading is that it's not about the words, it's about the images and the emotions that those images create. And that's the same thing with captions. Just by adding captions, it introduces, you know, images into people's minds without you even having to create anything visually in your videos. So that's the first thing. That's really amazing. The other thing that it does is that it creates movement in your videos, other than you moving. But if you've got captions there, it creates movement. And, you know, when you think about us, if you could for a second imagine that we might be animals or that we maybe are, depending on your belief systems here, but, you know, if you think about, aside from that, we're attracted by movement. You know, when there's movement, we notice. I mean, there's many examples of this in nature where movement is so critical for our survival. And so that plays off in videos as well. So there's movement, we notice it. So captions, they move on the screen, you notice it, so you stop. The other thing that happens with captions is that it creates an open loop. That's the other thing that us humans are, we're just like monkeys, you know, we can't stand open loops. We can't stand secrets all that much. We can't stand them to stay secrets. We want to find out what is this secret thing. We want to close the loop. And when you add captions to your videos, that's exactly what it does. I mean, if I say, for example, twinkle, twinkle, little, you know, it hurts your brain because I didn't say the last word, you know, and it's not until I say the last word that you finally go, okay, finally, relief. So it's almost like going full circle, you know, like going back home, you know, it's like you start your journey, it's the hero's journey all over again. You start your hero's journey and you're not satisfied until you get home again, you know, so, or, you know, to the next level of home, whatever that is. So same with captions, it opens up loops and people naturally want to close them. So what does that mean for your video and your engagement and your watch time? You know, it's going to massively increase your engagement and connection and watch time on your videos, which means you're going to have a much better opportunity for building that trust and for ultimately having a relationship with your audience, which is really powerful.
Yeah,
it all just comes back. Yeah, it all just comes back to adding something as simple as captions to your videos.
Yeah, lots of compelling reasons there for captions on videos. Now, the captioning service you do is the captions that you produce, they're based on the content of the, or is it actually based on the script is what I'm wanting to ask, of the video itself?
Yeah, we basically caption pretty much exactly people's words. And that's, you know, that's one of the things with captioning, you've got to try and stay as true to what the person is saying. Otherwise, it's not really captions. And sometimes it's kind of tricky because sometimes some people don't have the best grammar and you just want to, you just want to correct it for them, but you can't.
You know, well, that's part of the personality, isn't it?
Correct. So we stay true to how people speak and what they say. I mean, we remove obvious things like the ums and ahs and obvious errors and things like that. But in general, we stay very true to how, you know, to exactly what people are saying. And yeah, that's also why we use human beings, you know, for doing the work, because currently AI or artificial intelligence is just not quite there. Can't pick up on little things that help with connection. You know, things like when people quote themselves, being able to use quotation marks. AI does not know when that happens until unless you tell it. You say, quote, unquote, you know, sort of thing. You know, no one speaks like that. You know, Americans do a little bit more, but, you know, in general, people don't speak, they don't say that they're going to say a quote right now, you know. So AI can't pick up on something like that. Just one small example. AI can't pick up on jargon quite often, or names, or, you know, sometimes there's a weird name that AI does not recognize or whatever. Or the other thing that AI struggles with is knowing when there's an idea bite. Not quite sure what to call this. I'm not sure if this, the vernacular has really been developed yet, but there's when there's an idea bite. So what you often see with AI is, you know, when the slide comes on for the caption, it would break the idea that the person is speaking about in half. And it sort of, it breaks the train of thought a little bit. That's happens very often. So it doesn't know where to break sentences very well. The other thing it doesn't know is where to put full stops very well either. It can do it, but it often puts it in the wrong place or it puts it in an awkward place that breaks the flow of the conversation. And when you think about this, if your job is to connect with your viewer, you want to remove as many points of friction as possible. So every time there's a slight little mistake like that in your captions and people are reading it, it creates an opportunity for interruption. And whenever there's an opportunity for interruption, it creates an opportunity for disengagement and for people to just keep on scrolling. So you want to remove those as much as possible, which means you want to get your captions as perfect as possible. And that's why we've got 100% accuracy guarantee in our service as well. And you just can't get that with AI. It's impossible. I mean, you can get that along with human helps. Like if you get your original AI captions done, you still need a human being to fix up the mistakes, and that's fine. But oftentimes what we found is it takes longer to fix those mistakes than just to do it from scratch with a human being.
Sometimes the AI is so way off beam that you've got to go back and listen to the whole thing again. So I just got no idea what that could have been. Yeah.
Correct. And sometimes there can be some embarrassing mistakes, you know. I mean, I can't think of any embarrassing ones right now, but there's plenty around where someone might say a word and it, you know, the AI might bring in a total different word that it might be quite rude or off-putting or disingenuous or, you know, without respect or whatever, you know. So it's important to get it right. I mean, our words are powerful. The world is, wars are started with just words, you know. So it's very important.
Now, if I want to do a video that I want to promote or I want to post on social media, let's say I want to talk about an idea that I have and get some conversation going around that idea, and I come to you and I say, can you caption this video? Are there some tips you'd give me, first of all, before I even record the video, of how to make it as powerful as I possibly can to get maximum engagement? Because they're my words. So I guess, you know, if I give you rubbish content, your captioning's probably not going to help me that much.
Right. Well, I think in general, captions will help you regardless. It'll help engagement regardless of your actual message. And the reason I say that is because you've probably had the experience where you might have been in a movie theater, and it's a pretty bad movie, but you're thinking, yeah, I'm halfway through, you know, if I leave now, I won't know what happened in the end, even though it's a bad movie. So you keep on watching. there's that it's called the Zeigarnik effect. You know, we want to close the loop. So by adding captions to videos, it automatically creates that already. So by default, your videos are going to be more engaging, even though your content might not be. Next time people are going to think twice about watching a video, right? Because they go, oh, this guy was boring last time, or he didn't, you know, didn't give me what I wanted. So, but there's certainly a lot of things you can do for making your videos more engaging aside from captions, for sure. So we've already talked about the connection thing and where you place your awareness when you're speaking into the camera. That's very important. It's also very important. We sort of touched a little bit on this in a different realm, but really being very clear on understanding your viewers' point of view and their pain points and their struggles and their desires, really understanding what it is that they truly want, and creating content that responds to that. It's so often the cases where you only see the successful ones, where someone follows something that they're really passionate about and they don't even care necessarily about their audience, but it just so happened that what they're passionate about also aligns with a really big majority of people, and then they get this massive following very quickly. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes you can be interested in something very obscure and very passionate about it, and maybe there's only a world audience of 3 people, you know? And so if you create content about that, just that, and you don't consider your audience or a wider audience, you know, you might struggle to build an audience. So I think there's a balance between creating content that you're interested in, but also content that your viewers would be interested in. And I think that they're a marriage. You know, it's not just about you, and it's not just about your audience. If you can bring those things together, because you've got to speak with conviction as well. And the only way to speak with conviction is if you're truly passionate about the topic, right? So you've got to find that middle ground where it's something that you're passionate about, but there's enough overlap with people in the world as well who will also be passionate about it and will also want to engage with you. So that's the other thing, responding to that. And in terms of presentation, it's interesting. I think there's a misconception that you've got to be someone different to who you really are to be able to get attention. And there's plenty of examples on like just YouTube where, you know, you can just be yourself and you can be either boring or you can be exciting or you can be whatever it is. The point is that you're true to yourself. And because of that, other people who are like you will resonate with that. There's a couple of examples just in the last week. So one is, I'm not sure if he's still active, but back when I was starting out with this, you know, 12 years ago or so, his name is Dave Dugdale. You can check out his channel on YouTube. He talks about DSLR cameras, very knowledgeable, but he just doesn't jump around in the videos and screams and does weird things. He's a relaxed sort of a guy, older gentleman, and he just gently explains his knowledge about what he knows about DSLR cameras. And I mean, he had a big, massive audience that he built around that. And it, you know, I think people just resonated with him. He didn't try to be someone else. There's another great example, and I can't remember her name, but she's an publicly announced introvert, a girl. She's from, I've forgotten where she's from now, but somewhere in Europe. And in the last 18 months, she's built a subscriber base of 250,000 people on YouTube. You go and look at her videos. There's nothing fancy about it. She just speaks her own truth, and it's, you know, in her introverted way. And there's nothing necessarily exciting about it. But because it's true and raw, and she's just being herself, people love that. People really respond to that. So I mean, if you're more of an extrovert, then, you know, stick with that, because you're going to attract other people who respond to that. But if you're an introvert, stick to that. You don't have to become an extrovert or put on a different personality on your videos to be engaging. You could just be yourself. And that's very important.
And if you're trying to do that, like being somebody different or putting on an act for the camera, that again brings you inside, doesn't it? Your attention now is back on yourself, because you're focusing all your energy on being somebody different than you really are, which is completely contrary to the advice you gave us earlier in our conversation.
And what it could also do is it could actually end up creating a lot of stress on your life, because if you're creating essentially this virtual personality and how people then perceive you to be, and it's not really who you are, the more you do that, the more tension it starts creating, because it's like a rubber band, you know, that the further away you stretch it, the more the stress becomes. And, you know, at one point you just cave in. And, I mean, this happened to me at the beginning, where, you know, when I was getting started and sort of feeling my way through, and I was conditioned in a certain way through the education system to act and be in a certain way. And so every time I'd get on video, I'd like have my suit on and I have a tie and, like, you know, be all businessy and professional. And like, you look at some of my earlier videos, it's on a different channel, so you don't even know where it is. But when I look at it, I just kind of cringe, you know, go, wow, that's not me. You know, that's like, that was so stiff and so, you know, too corporate for who I really am. And the more I was doing that, the more stress it was creating, you know. So it wasn't until I started going, how, well, just get rid of the suit thing and get rid of the idea of trying to be too professional, you know, and just connect with the audience and just be me, you know, that things really started changing. So I think that's really important.
Yeah, love it. Now, I could go on talking video for ages, but I'm just watching the time here. I'm aware of we've been going for quite some time. So I think it's a good point now to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our listener who's, you know, the audience is primarily innovators and leaders in their field. And so we're looking for some tips from your experience that hopefully will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Sure. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. What do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Yeah, I had a bit of a think about this beforehand, Jürgen, and I think there's a lot of things you could use, fancy tools and tricks, or whatever, to try and be innovative, but ultimately it comes down to just one thing, and that is to essentially be your customer. Be them. And when you do that, you will start feeling their pain. You'll actually feel it instead of just imagining it. Because it's one thing trying to imagine it and trying to put yourself in their shoes. It's another to actually feel it. And then once you can actually feel it, you can have true empathy. So when you feel their pain too, being a human being, you become driven for getting rid of that pain. I mean, we're all of us, well, most people I know anyway, are driven to always move away from pain and towards a pleasure, right? Or towards not pain, whatever that is. And so when you feel that pain, you're driven to find the solution for yourself. And inadvertently, by doing that, you also create a solution for your audience, your customers. So I think it's as simple as that. It comes down to empathy. And the best way to get empathy is to be the customer yourself, like feel the pain. And then you can respond to
the customer.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody. Well, actually, I think I put a video out on this topic or related topic, which was, you know, take your own customer journey, or like it was be your customer, but it was in relation to an experience I had around returning a phone that was broken in the early days of our lockdown, when I was told, oh, just bring it into the store. And I said, well, I can't do that because we're not allowed out of the house now. And then, you know, there was a long, long process of frustration and pulling my hair out in terms of getting this phone repaired, which I needed to run my business. I needed it more than ever because I couldn't go out of the house.
And I said, well, if anybody in that organization had actually taken or submitted a support request to their own support team, they would know that the system is totally broken. So be your customer.
Absolutely. Yeah, and what really hit me about it as well, as I wrote some notes down beforehand, was that you look at, often I can't remember if Steve Jobs actually said this, or someone, thought he said this. I can't remember, but I remember that he was often sort of praised or criticized, depending on your viewpoint, for not doing any market research, or and for just being able to come up with or knowing what the customer wants without doing market research. And so I don't know all the facts related around that, but it seems to be consistent here that if you're able to have that true empathy with your customer, you're going to come up with solutions that they haven't even thought about, and that they won't even be able to tell you about, because they're not in that mind space of coming up with solutions. Like, you are. And when you feel that pain, I think it reduces the need for extensive market research. I'm not saying it's useless, but I'm saying, when you can feel that pain, it allows you to come up with solutions that you never would come up with from market research, for example. So, and I think that's a big secret. Like, a lot of the stuff we do is like, we don't get it necessarily from doing market research. We get it from experiencing the pain ourselves and then coming up with solutions.
Yeah. And even, market research, like, it's understanding the pain and empathizing with the customer enables you to ask better questions and get better information, and also to take all the information that you gather in your market research and actually make sense of it, draw conclusions from it, draw insights from it. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's definitely still useful. Like, we still have like client interviews in our business and, regularly, and that's very useful, especially for improving our products. They won't necessarily tell us the solution, though. They might tell us what's not working for them, and then we still have to respond to that. And to be able to respond properly, we have to feel their pain too, so we have to put ourselves through those steps as well, for sure.
Great. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Okay. So it's sort of aligned with the previous question, but basically some of the best things I've done to be able to come up with great ideas and products is to go into a market with this attitude of just being helpful. That's it. Just trying to help. That's all I'm trying to do. And so, for example, when my friend approached me, he said, look, I'm struggling with this caption stuff. And at the time, I was sort of in between projects, and I thought, look, I've got some time. I'm just going to see how I can help you. And I'm not going to ask for any reward or payment or anything. There's not even an idea necessarily of a business coming out of it, but I'm just going to see how I can help and build on that. And then from that, from you getting your hands dirty, just trying to be helpful, all of a sudden, all these ideas sprout from that. And that's exactly how Splashio started. Everything we've got now is from that original desire just to help. And it's spawned this whole business now, which has been quite incredible. So yeah, that's my best tip. There are other things like brainstorming and stuff like that, but I found the ones that stick are just when we're just honestly trying to help without expecting anything in return.
Yeah, I love that. And essentially, whatever business you're in, you're actually helping your customers. So having that philosophy right from the outset is and then, like we were saying earlier in the conversation, having an awareness of what are the opportunities that spring from doing that, spring from, the backdoor opportunities that you mentioned, just having an awareness of those things then allows you to kind of move forward with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a favorite resource that you use a lot?
For innovation in particular?
Yeah.
Or productivity? I've got a couple innovation. Here. So, so if we talk about innovation, I would say actually no, I don't. Unless we're talking about something that can help capture ideas without getting in the way.
Yeah.
So for me, when it comes to innovation, to capturing ideas, you know, to be trying to get away from technology, in fact. And the only thing I would take with me is either a piece of paper and a pencil, not a pen, a pencil in particular. It's something about a pencil that brings out my creativity. And either that or an iPad. The trouble with an iPad is there's distraction on it. So, you know, iPad with an Apple Pencil, and I use the GoodNotes application. It's, there's pros and cons, and you can be quite creative within the drawing app like that, but then there's distractions, and that's the big drawback. And the trouble with paper is that it's finite, you know, and it stacks up, so you can't always carry it with you. So I used to have a Sony e-ink tablet a number of years ago, and I really loved it, but I replaced it with my iPad. But now, just yesterday, in fact, last night, I bought a new one from Remarkable. It's the Remarkable
tablet. Yeah,
it's about, ended up spending about $900 on it. So Australian. And for me, it's totally worth it because it's going to allow me to essentially be away from technology and just, I mean, that is still technology, but it's not in the way, if you get what I'm saying. It's like
There's nothing else on there. Yeah.
It's not distracting me. It's allowing my ideas to flow. So that's if there's any tool that would be the idea of moving away from technology, unless it's a tool like that can help the ideas flow without getting in the way.
Yeah. I didn't realize they're already producing.
They are. It's the Remarkable 2 that's out. So you can already buy the first one, but I didn't bother with that because I knew it was just the first one. But the second one actually looks amazing. It's actually incredible. So the Remarkable 2. Even though I bought it yesterday, their shipment in the batch that I'm in is only going to be like end of October or something like that. It's quite a wee way down the track. But I'm happy to wait because that's how much I love their product. In terms of productivity, try and keep things simple. I've tried so many different things. One I've been settling on most, and it's still malleable. I think that's the thing for me. It changes depending on what's happening in our lives or on our businesses. But what's been sort of sticking most is this idea of using a something that can capture ideas or tasks or projects, a capturing place, and that can have some sort of an inbox. And then applying the Kanban method or a variation of the Kanban method to that to help process those ideas. So, for example, currently what I've got is we're using Asana for helping this. And so we create boards, or columns in a Kanban sort of a way. And I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So the traditional Kanban, you've only got the three. You've got sort of like the inbox of all the tasks that needs to get done. And then you've got your work in progress, which is the middle one, and you've got your done, your finished, complete column. So I've got a bit more than that. I've got the inbox. So that's designed to capture both task ideas, but also project ideas. So it doesn't matter. Anything goes in there. This is just like this big, messy list of things. Then the next column I've got is projects, not tasks. So projects that are ready to work on. And by that, sometimes I might come up with an idea for a project, but it's not ready to work on until I've fleshed it out a bit, until I've figured out all the steps, until there's all the tasks and all the milestones and everything figured out for it. So that's the second column, projects that are ready for me to work on. And I order them in a list of priorities. So the most important one, most urgent important one is at the top. And it can only get into that column once it's ready, once that project idea has been processed and fleshed out a bit more. Then the next one is the projects that I'm working on right now. And the idea is that you only have one there at a time. And you work on it until it's done. And there's two things here that helps with that. One is you've got to block off time for it. Otherwise, the next column that I'm going to talk about is going to prevent you from doing it. So you've got to block off time every day for working on that project. That's one thing. And the other idea is comes in with another column coming down the track is if you get stuck on it, you move into another column, which I'll get to in a second. But the next column is our urgent tasks. And so we apply a 30-minute rule for that, or I do anyway. If it's a task that I can get done in 30 minutes and it's not a project, I pop it on there and it's urgent. So I pop it in there. Otherwise, it just stays in the inbox until it becomes urgent. So that way I know that if there's any red flags, I can quickly fix them. It's not going to take the whole day. It's just 30 minutes or less. If it's more than 30 minutes, it becomes a project that I then need to prioritize. And then the next one is the pen. I learned this from my buddy Adam Bean or Beanie. He's here on the coast as well. Great idea. And that's when you get stuck on a project that you're working on now. And for some reason, you just can't finish it. And you move it into the pen. And then every week you have a meeting, we go through this tasking and you look at the pen and go, what's wrong? Why is this one in the pen? What needs to get done to get this fixed or finished? And sometimes it's dependent on someone else's work or you got stuck on something or whatever it is, it's in the pen there. So you realize sort of like, it's like this open loop that sits there. You know, you've got to finish it, but you move it to the pen realizing that you can't work on it right now. And then the final one is just done. You know, it's done and dusted and you move it out. So yeah, those, I'll just go through them again. So the inbox, project, inbox the first one. Second one is projects ready to work on now. Projects to work, ready to work on in a prioritized list. Third one is project working on now. Fourth one is urgent tasks that are 30 minutes or less. Fourth one is the pen. And the fifth one, the fifth one and the sixth one is done.
Yeah. All right. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I like the idea of, you know, using that to focus and making sure that, you know, there's one project you're working on right now and get that done. And if something's gone off the rails there or you can't move forward, then put it aside and review it.
Yeah. I mean, it works well, but it's I think it's also important to realize that it's got to be variable depending on your needs. Like my needs change all the time. So that process does change as well, depending on what's happening.
All right. Well, this next question is probably related to this. What's the best way to keep a project on track?
Yeah, for both, if it's either for us or team members or, for me or team members or clients, or people who work for us, agencies, whatever. It's just two things, deadlines and consequences. That's all. You create a deadline and a consequence if the deadline is not met. That's it. And that gets people... that gets people off their backsides for sure. And the consequence has to be appropriate for the benefits of working on that project. Yeah. Mm. So for example, if it's an agency and you've got a KPI or a deadline agreed with them, if they don't meet it, you just delay their payment, or you agree with them that you're going to delay their payment or they don't get paid unless they meet the deadline. Or they get paid less or whatever. So there's some sort of real consequence that goes along with the deadline. The deadline itself in itself is not enough. There has to be a consequence.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's it's an interesting approach. And I guess certainly with a supplier relationship, that's a good way to do it. And you say, well, you get paid this much if you deliver X at point Y or before point Y. But, and so if all of that's not met, then, the payment part is negotiable again.
I've tried this time and time again. It seems like, unfortunately, us as human beings, we're motivated more by pain than by pleasure, right? So if I said deadlines and rewards, it wouldn't work as well as deadlines and consequences. It might still work with some, but it'd be the minority. Like I remember working with, and this is the first time I realized this, I worked with an engineer. He was a very creative guy. We had some really strict deadlines with one of our clients, and he had to do some coding and stuff. And every week he would just miss the deadline. I go, dude, what's happening? This, our client's getting upset because they got to keep on paying more and more. What can we do to help you meet the deadlines? And he said, hey, he doesn't know. I'm the manager, so I should come up with something. I said, okay. It was around about Easter time, so I bought these Easter bunnies. And then I said, okay, I will. When you meet the deadline, you get an extra Easter bunny. It was as simple as that. It's really stupid, right? And then he still didn't meet the deadline. So I'm like, dude, that's ridiculous. I've created this amazing reward for you. Well, it wasn't that amazing, but still, just an Easter bunny. But still, what surprised me next was when I tried something else. I said, okay, let's change this up. Instead of you getting a reward for when you meet a deadline, what I'll do is I'll buy 10 Easter bunnies and I'll put them there in front of you for you to see. And when you don't meet the deadline or certain milestones, we remove Easter bunnies. And that worked. It worked just by switching it around like that. It was as simple as that. The consequence doesn't always have to be, as crazy as not paying people or whatever. It can be just like You're not getting any Easter bunnies. Sorry, you were going to get them, but now you're not anymore. You know, it seems to just kick something in the back of our minds that makes us perform.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can be creative around that. Yeah, I love it
for sure.
All right, now what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
You know, it's so interesting. That's such a great question because it makes you think that you have to be different.
Mm.
And I think the best way that we can be perceived as different is when we actually forget about ourselves and make everything about the customer or the client.
Mm.
And it's an interesting one because it's sort of related to other things like as well. Another entrepreneur friend of mine asked the other day on Facebook, you know, what is your key to happiness or how do you find happiness or what can you do to get happiness? And I respond to that saying something like maybe happiness is one of those things that the more you pursue it, the less you get it. You know, it's one of those things that maybe the only way you can get it is by giving it away.
Hmm.
And this seems like a similar sort of a thing. It's like essentially, you know, differentiate yourself. Why do you want to differentiate yourself? It's because you want to do more business, right, in this case. Mm. So how do you do more business? Is it by focusing more on yourself and making yourself, you know, seem like the most awesome person or most awesome company? Or is it to sort of forget about that and to just hone in, shift that awareness again to your customer and your client and what their needs are and then responding to that? So it's like... It's the same sort of idea of getting into flow state with Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. He talks about when you get into flow state, it's not about you anymore. You know, you disappear.
Yeah.
And that's when you create your best work. So I think there's some secret in there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Focusing on the customer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Gideon. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you and about Splashio and maybe even reach out and say thank you for all that you've shared with us today?
Yeah, sure thing. A couple of places. People want to reach out to me on LinkedIn. Just search my name, Gideon Shalwick, and happy to connect there with you, especially if you mention you've listened to this interview. If you're interested in getting your videos captioned and making them more engaging and connecting with your audience, and you don't want to be doing it yourself, you know, check out Splashio. It's splashio.com. And we've got a free trial there at the moment. You can submit your first four videos if they're under 5 minutes for free, and we'll process them for free as if you're a paying client. So yeah, and then it's a 7-day free trial, and then after that, your first payment kicks in.
Mm, that's great. Lovely, wonderful offer, and thanks for that. And we'll post those links in the show notes so people can click straight through.
Brilliant.
All right. Now, do you have any parting advice for our listeners today?
No, we live in such interesting times right now, you know, and it's like I think one of your questions that you had in preparation for this was, you know, what are your plans for the future or something along the lines like that? What's next for you? And I was thinking, you know, what is next and how far ahead are we thinking? And the reality for us is that I've got a vision of what I want to achieve in the business, but it's not necessarily related to time. It's more like a sculpture, a beautiful sculpture that I want to create, and I'm chipping away at it and I'm really, really enjoying the process. And there's something to be said about, you know, honing in on the process as opposed to the outcome and really, really enjoying the process. Because if you're not enjoying the process, I mean, you might enjoy the outcome when it does come, but it's not going to last very long. And what if you don't even enjoy it? You know, it's just sort of you you know, what if finally you get that outcome and you realize that's not actually what I wanted? Yeah. You've wasted all that time being unhappy, you know, moving towards it. So I think, I mean, the outcome-based sort of goals are useful, but I think it's you're definitely a happier person if you can figure out enjoying the process of getting there, like, you know,
enjoy the journey. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I was speaking with another guest, Paris Cutler, a little while ago, and her story is a fascinating one because she had what, you know, from the outside looks like a very successful career, where she achieved a whole lot of amazing things. And she tells the story about when she kind of got to a point where she had all this success, suddenly she felt empty. She probably not enjoyed that journey, and now she's changed her life and turned that all around. So reminded me of that.
Amazing. Yeah, I've been there, done that. So, yeah.
All right. Well, finally, Gideon, who would you like me to interview on a future, well, actually chat with on a future InnovaBuzz podcast, and why?
I was like recommending my friend Yarrow. He was my first real big successful business partner and way back. And, you know, we're still friends, and he's a great guy. He's very knowledgeable about business and online business and a great all-round guy. I think it'd be a very interesting chat to have.
All right. We'll get an introduction to Yarrow from you and bring him on the show to have a conversation. Look forward to that as well. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Gideon. I've really enjoyed this. There's been lots of great information here about doing videos, being more confident on camera, making them engaging, getting connection with your audience, and of course, about captioning. So thanks again. I wish you all the best for the future, and let's stay in touch.
Thank you very much, Jürgen. Great opportunity. Really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and engaging conversation with Gideon and took something away from his episode. One of the highlights for me was Gideon's point about the creation of value and leveraging that value through human marketing, getting connection so that you stand out from all the noise. I'd love to know what you took away from Gideon's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Gideon Shalwick. That is GideonShalwick. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Gideon Shalwick. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Gideon there, as well as links to the Splashio website, his LinkedIn profile, and the other resources we spoke about in today's conversation. Gideon suggested that we have a conversation with entrepreneur and founder of Blog Mastermind, Yarrow Starak, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast episode. So Yarrow, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Gideon Shalwick. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got even more fantastic guests lined up, including Lisa Monette from Badass Beauty TV and Chad Cooper, author of Time Isn't the Problem. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.